Namaste. All right, so welcome. Today we're doing a flow for the hips, and we will open up the four major quadrants in the hips and the legs. You can divide this up differently. You could say that there are more groups or do more stretches for the hips and the legs, which is fine. We're just going to focus on these four major areas, the front of the thigh, the buttocks area, or you could say the side, the back, the back of the thigh bone, the hamstrings, and the inside of the thigh. Okay, so basically all four quadrants, if you were to split up your thigh into four quadrants, we are hitting one of each. So let's start with the back. We're going to bring the right leg out straight, the left foot to the inside of the thigh. We'll fold forward and down over the leg. We call that a half butterfly in yin. It is a yin variation of the pose that is traditionally called Janu Shishasana. Janu is knee, Shusha is head, so it basically means head to knee pose, although I don't recommend you actually practice it that way. So just relax your upper body forward and down, let it come as far as it wants to go. In fact, you might want support, like Erin is using underneath her forehead there to support her. If you don't feel like you're being pushed forward enough, you can sit up on something, and that will have the opposite effect of pushing you more aggressively into the pose. I recommend these types of modifications rather than pushing or pulling yourself down. That's my recommendation. I'm not saying that it's necessarily wrong. So one way to approach this posture in a more yang or aggressive way, and we should remember that yin and yang are on a continuum. There is no absolute yin. Where does yin stop? How yin can you get? If we put you in a coma, is that even more yin than what we're doing now? Put you in a coma and then sort of put you into different positions. Where does it stop? How far can we go? And same with yang yoga. How many push-ups can we do? How many difficult poses can we do in a class? We could say, oh, well, at a certain point it becomes unhealthy. And yeah, that's probably true, but where is that point? It might be different for everybody. So there's no absolute yin, there's no absolute yang. There are gradations, and we have to figure out for ourselves how far do we want to go on that continuum, how much is safe for us, how much is going to get us the most benefit out of our time that we spend here. I would almost guarantee that every person in this room feels like their time is their most valuable thing. As much as we all want more money, and part of the reason why many of us want more money is because we think it will buy us more time, right? If I could get someone to clean my house, then I could. If I could get someone to watch my kids, then I could, right? So a lot of us equate that freedom of actually having more time with having more money. And so many of us actually chase more money. That could be a correct assumption or it could be incorrect. You might find that chasing money actually gives you less and less time, but that's on an individual basis. So we want to make the best use of our time. And that means, in a sense, affecting the body as much as we can in a therapeutic way with the time that we're given. In this class, we have an hour of yin and we do 15 minutes of meditation. It's not really that long, so we want to make use of that time as best as we can. So while I recommend most students relax forward and down, and you should feel a stretch of the back of the hamstring, Another approach is to grab the foot, keep the spine more straight, and pull yourself down. This will tilt the pelvis more aggressively. The problem with that approach is, especially for someone that's newer, it can be tricky. It can be tricky to have the proprioceptive awareness to really sense, is this too much? Is this not enough? I've had a student in the past who was very, very tight, and he had sort of a competitive bent. You could just see it in the way that he practiced. And he was always yanking and pulling himself down. And he would complain about his back pain. Well, I sent him to my chiropractor, who's really much more than a chiropractor. She likes to call herself the body mechanic, and I believe that is what she is. She doesn't just crack bones. She has a very unique way of seeing the body and movement and its relationship with movement. So anyway, she talked to this gentleman, and she found out that as he was pulling himself down, he was not increasing the stretch in his hamstrings at all. He was simply pulling the vertebrae in the lower part of his back apart in an unskillful way, in a way that was actually causing damage to the spine. That's why when I say round your back, let yourself come forward, I also say not aggressively, because you can overdo it. Now, did he have the sense to know when he was overdoing it? No. He just knew he was in pain all the time in his back. He didn't realize that it was the choices he was making, what he was doing, that was causing that to happen. Let's switch sides. Laura, was there someone up there to check you in?
Yes.
There was?
Yes, Michelle.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
So in this pose, I'd like you to feel the stretch at the back of the left leg. As I mentioned earlier, we're focusing on four quadrants in the legs. Now you might say to yourself, well, I want to stretch all the muscles in the leg individually. That's impossible. You simply cannot work with the body in that way. With doing asana, one of my teachers, my yin teacher as a matter of fact, he likes to say asana is a blunt instrument. So if you think you're going to get in and stretch one muscle and strengthen one individual muscle using asana, you're kidding yourself. That isn't really how this tool is meant to be used. You can try, you can go ahead, and I've seen teachers who have tried. And then asana practice becomes this very sort of minuscule thing where you're getting deeper and deeper into tweaking the body and engaging one muscle and relaxing other muscles. Maybe that's very beneficial, I don't know. But I get very little out of that. Because for me, asana is still part of a spiritual practice. And the fact of human bodies and human anatomy is you can go down that rabbit hole and never come back. You can study anatomy for the rest of your life and never learn all that there is to learn. Paul tells a story about a gentleman who taught anatomy at a local college where he lived. And he was about to retire. And he said to Paul, he said, you know, I can't wait to retire so I can go back to studying anatomy. And the fact of the matter is, you can teach anatomy, you can be a doctor, you can study all the time and still not get to the bottom of what's going on with human bodies. I have a friend who's a surgeon, and she says that I probably know more than most surgeons do about anatomy. I don't know if that's true. But the fact of the matter is, even a surgeon who's working on your body has to choose their battles. They can't learn everything there is to know about anatomy. Human movement is the same way, what's called biomechanics. Moving the body is an extremely complex thing. When you add to the fact that every human body is different and unique, you recognize just what a task it is to try and move a human body safely and effectively. I don't believe this can be done in a top-down manner. I just don't believe in that. Other people do, and you might believe that too, and that you're welcome to your opinion. Maybe you know something I don't. But from my experience, my teaching, my learning, it doesn't work. It has to be a two-way street, student and teacher. The teacher can give the direction. Here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to stretch the back of the leg. Can you feel that? Then the student must be willing to introspect and feel. Why? Yes, I do feel that stretch. The teacher also will guide you and avoid hurting yourself. You might feel pain in this area or that area. This is undesirable. And then again, the student needs to introspect. Do I feel pain in that area? Actually, I do. And then they need to be willing to communicate with the teacher, because it is a cooperative effort solving that problem of why are you in pain? Why are you having trouble? Let's take a look at that. It can't be done in a one-way street where I'm just telling you what you're doing wrong. To me, that doesn't work. This can be difficult for those who are newer to yoga or to this practice. They may have not been asked to do that in the past. But like anything, with practice, it becomes much, much easier. Let's rebound. So we're going to come all the way back onto our back, relax, close the eyes, and feel. Try and feel without expectation or agenda. This means letting go of the idea that I'm supposed to feel good. I'm not supposed to feel pain. If there's pain there or discomfort, see if you can allow them to be there. See if you can hold a space for that condition, which is part of the human experience. I'm not wishing you any discomfort or pain. But the fact of the matter is, if we are to walk a true spiritual path, if we're interested in awakening and clearing out after awakening, then we have to be willing to allow that discomfort, even pain, to arise and to face it, to not run away from it, and not to think something is wrong or amiss just because we don't feel good in this moment. All right, let's bring our legs in as a counter stretch. We call it the leg cradle. This is your opportunity to address any discomfort you're feeling. You might rock side to side or forward and back. Whatever feels right, whatever brings you a sense of balance. And then we'll hinge. So hands under hips, extend your legs toward the ceiling, lift your head and neck. And as you exhale, gradually lower the legs, hover just above the ground. Inhale, let's pop the legs up and let's come all the way up to seated. Once you're upright, let's come into a tabletop position, hands under shoulders and knees under hips. You may want to turn, let's go ahead and take care of this. So, yeah, turn sideways, left or right, 90 degrees, which means facing the side of the mat. Then take the right leg and kick it straight out to the right side, kind of like a kickstand, just straight out in line with your knee and your hips. Take the foot and your left knee away from one another as far as you can, sinking your hips toward the ground. Now, if your left knee complains because it's pressing into the ground, please grab a blanket and put it underneath your knee or shin, whatever you need to make that left leg comfortable. We aren't trying to torture that knee or press it into the ground aggressively, so if you can avoid that, go ahead and avoid it. You can stay on your hands, come to your forearms. You can also drop down onto a bolster or blanket with your torso. You can lay your head on a block or something, back of your hands. All of that's good stuff. Whatever feels comfortable. What I want you to feel is a stretch in the inside of the right thigh. Does everyone feel that? All right. Now, you might feel a stretch in the inside of your left thigh. That is awesome, too. You might not, and that's fine, whether you do or you don't. I want you to focus on the right thigh, the inside of that thigh, and stretch it as much as you can safely. How aggressive, again, we are, that is up to you. I cannot feel your pose, and I trust that you know how much is enough. If you're new, you might not, and so that's part of what experience brings us. There's no shortcut to that. A teacher can't give you that. A teacher can only share their experience, which will be different from yours. You may be able to benefit from their sharing, but it will not replace your experience. It may help you move a little faster. It will not replace your experience. That's why we want to pay attention to our experience, because there's no replacement for that. No book learning, no teacher, no guru, no one's going to be able to get us around that. It's just impossible. It's our journey. It's meant to be. This is one reason why Buddha said to his disciples when he was on his deathbed, supposedly, he said, "Be a light unto yourself." Everything in the teaching is provisional. You can change anything if it needs to change. There's nothing sacred here. There's no dogma here. And I so appreciate his teaching as a result. Being awake in the moment is being awake in the moment. And the moment's constantly changing. We might find that this moment is so similar to the moment before that we can use a lot of our learning and knowledge to help us navigate this moment. But human beings have a tendency to not just use past information as a rough guide, but we have the tendency to get very fixed in our views. If something worked in the past, we think it should work again. And when reality stares us straight in the face and says, "Sorry, that's not working anymore," we often persist and insist and say, "No, this should work. It worked in the past. I insist." This is called unskillful behavior. We might do this with people, asking them to change, to be different than they are. We might do this for years, decades, with our children or our spouses, our parents even. They shouldn't. They should be nicer to me. They should appreciate me. They shouldn't leave their socks on the floor. They should clean up after themselves. Whatever it is, we can tell ourselves that story over and over again, how they should be different than they are. And we can suffer as a result. Or we can face facts the way things are and see things exactly as they are. And then we find peace. It doesn't mean we can't tell them that they should pick up their socks or clean up their room, but there's a different quality to it. A peaceful mind has a different quality when it acts in the world. And it acts from a very different perspective from the egoic mind. It acts for the whole and not the individual. It might look like the individual is acting, of course. That's what it seems like. But the behavior and the action comes from a different place within us. We all have this place within us. And what yoga is really trying to guide us to is to that place, to reconnect with that inner teacher, that inner guidance, that light. Let's switch sides. Take your time. your connective tissue does not change shape very quickly, so you don't want to rush. I'll give you plenty of time to set yourself up on the other side. Again, we want to be sure we feel the stretch now on the inside of the left thigh. And if you do not feel that or you are in pain, let me know. Toward the knee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not the best place to feel it. You want to feel it more in the belly of the muscle. So what I'm going to do is, let's go ahead and put a little something under there.
Okay.
Does that take care of it?
Yes.
You feel it right in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not in here.
Okay.
Okay, good. So if you're feeling it more on your knee, a common modification I use is just placing a block right underneath the knee. So it's almost like you're creating a tourniquet or, I don't know what the right word is, you're sort of cutting off the lower limb, if you were, and trying to get it to focus more on the upper thigh. So again, might not work for everybody, but I've had it work for other students who've had similar problems. And so again, if there is a problem, it really is a cooperative effort to get to the bottom of it. Now, I'm not saying you can't find the solution on your own. You very well may be able to. You really have the guidance because you can feel what's going on in your body. The thing that I may possess is just, again, a lot of experience with human bodies of different types and shapes, a lot of teaching. I've seen things. I've heard these types of complaints before. But again, my suggestion may not work with your body. And so we may try 2, 3, 4, 5 different things before we find a solution. I almost always am able to help someone find a solution if we keep at it long enough. Sometimes it even means just doing a different pose, which is fine. I'm not attached to these shapes or poses. They're tools that we use to get into our bodies. So the practice happens on many different levels, and the levels are all intellectual in nature. Really, reality is just one. Reality just is. We can't label it or judge it. We can, but it doesn't change reality. Reality just is what it is. It's oneness, it's wholeness, it's complete. We, as egoic identities, tend to see separation. So we come up with different ways of trying to manage or understand reality. And these ways can be very helpful, they can be very useful, they can help us manipulate reality to get certain results that we desire. Medicine is one example of that. Science is another. And so is Taoism and yoga. These are ways of sort of slicing up reality and trying to understand it. So from the Western perspective, stretching your hips like we're doing today is very beneficial because as we age, we tend to lose flexibility in the lower part of the body, and we tend to lose strength in the upper part of the body. So our practices hopefully address these things. They help make the legs and the lower spine more flexible, and they help to induce strength in the upper body. Now, if you've been to more than one yin class, I hope you recognize that we do not build strength in the upper body here. So that's where something like vinyasa yoga comes in. Now, I wish I could say that any vinyasa class will work, but I've seen a trend at some studios toward eliminating more and more of the upper body work in vinyasa class because it's hard for people, right? It's hard for people to do a push-up. It's hard for people to bear their weight in their upper body. So some of the teachers conveniently just say, well, you know, let's just do more lunging. We'll just do more warriors, and we'll string them together, and we won't do any push-ups. We'll stay off the arms. We're not going to do any arm balances. The problem with this approach is many of us in this country especially, but in general, we need that strength in our upper body. So when you're doing vinyasa class, make sure for yourself that there is some upper body strengthening in that class, that you are bearing weight on your arms and your hands. Now, if you're new, it could be that you need to take your time building that strength. If you're too aggressive, you can end up with injuries in your wrists, your elbows, your shoulders. So whenever I teach vinyasa, I always try and give modifications. And again, it's a matter of if something is not working for you, if you're beginning to have pain, let's look at it. Let's find a way for you to practice so that you can do the practice and get its benefits without aggravating injuries, and slowly you can build the strength. Again, that might take some experimentation. But I've had students with all kinds of injuries, people who are very weak, doing my class twice a week, no problems, because they came to me and they said, how do I modify this? This doesn't work for me. How do I modify it? They use the modification every time they come to class, which is awesome. It's exactly what I want to see. All right, let's go ahead and lay on our belly. We'll rebound there. So you're just going to come lay flat. We call that a crocodile pose. It's a restorative asana, so it's not really yin. It's definitely not yang. And it's just for relaxing. And we usually rebound in those types of shapes. So take it easy. Feel your body. But don't stop there. Notice your mood, your emotional state. Notice the activity of your mind. What are you thinking about right now? Are you even listening to what I'm saying? You might not be, it doesn't matter to me. What is sort of pulling your attention? For most people, it's our thoughts that pull our attention until we awaken. Once we awaken spiritually, we begin to see that thought is just one more thing that's arising in our experience. And it's not, thought has a reality, but thoughts are not true. So yes, a thought might be part of my experience, but the truth of my opinion or thought, that's a different issue. And the people I study with say no thought is ultimately true. It might be relatively true, but in the ultimate sense, no thought is really true. Truth is right in front of you. It's closer than your nose, it's closer than your breath. You could say it is what you are. No thought can be that. All right, let's press back to a tabletop position. We'll do a little bit of bear pose. So we'll move the spine side to side, forward and back, twist to the left, twist to the right, combine those things together any which way you like. And again, feel. It's easy to just sort of start throwing ourselves around, and you're welcome to do that at first. But as you start to move, your body is going to give you feedback, if you will pay attention to it. It's saying, ooh, that kind of hurts, or this is tender, or oh, that feels really good. So those might guide you. How long do you hold a certain position? How far do you go? How many times do you repeat a certain movement? All right, from there, let's come back into downward dog. Tucking the toes, lifting the hips up and back. And by bending one knee and pressing the other heel to the ground and switching sides back and forth, you can really give those legs a nice stretch. You can work out fixations in the joints of the toes and the ankles and knees and the hips. Sometimes you hear them crack. And then we will do the sleeping swan. So let's bring the right knee toward the right wrist, right foot to the left wrist, hips down and back, torso forward and down. And you should feel stretch in the outside of your right hip and leg. Does anyone not feel that? Does anyone feel a strain in their right knee or ankle? No? Great. So that means it's both safe and effective. Of course, there are a lot of ways you can vary the pose. The knee could be straight, the knee could be out to the right side. The right foot could be back toward the hip, the right foot could be pulled up closer to the front of the mat. The hips could be rocked off to the left side, the hips could be rocked to the right side, the hips can be squared to the ground. Some people use a block underneath the left hip to help stabilize them. The arms could be out in front, they could be stacked, you could be resting your forehead on the back of your hands, or the back of your arms. You can add a twist to the torso, to the left or to the right, and you can also add a lateral flexion, bringing your torso off to the left or to the right. Again, all of these things will change the stretch you feel in your right hip. For us today, that is the most important thing. I feel the stretch in my right hip, and it's safe. If you want more, you will likely find that playing around with the variations I give you could give you more. If you want less, same story. You need to experiment. I can make suggestions, but that's all I can do. They may or may not work for you. And this is actually true on every level of human experience. Bar none. You might think that me saying that is sort of like I'm trying to weasel my way out of my job. And I've actually met yoga teachers who, in my opinion, are so arrogant that they actually believe they can keep someone safe or they can suggest something that works every time. But what I find is these people just simply don't listen to anything that isn't agreeing with their opinion. It's a way of feeling safe, knowing that you're able to help people, even though that's not true. I would challenge any yoga teacher to prove or show to me how somehow they're able to do something that a doctor can't do. No doctor will claim to be able to heal someone every time. I have a friend who's a surgeon, and she says, we don't do the healing. She says, we try and get your body to a point where it can do the healing. We might patch you back up, put you back together, but it's your body that has to heal itself. And that's a state of grace. It's very egoic, it's very arrogant to think we can do anything without grace. We might think we breathe. I'm the one doing it. Well, if you've ever had an asthma attack like me, you know that even your next breath is not necessarily a given. It can be taken away from you in a second. So what do? Many of us run around with the belief that we have to make it happen. We have to do it. So much is resting on our shoulders. And yet the reality is we don't do anything. We can take part. We can play our part. In fact, we have to. This is one of the great teachings of the ancient yogic scripture called the Bhagavad Gita. It's believed that in India at the time that the Gita was written, Buddhism was spreading. And it was spreading, and people were not really understanding Buddhism in its totality. And so a situation occurred where people were meditating, and they were going into caves, and they were leaving their lives, and they were dropping everything. And this was beginning to create problems. Let's come through a downward dog. Give yourself a good stretcheroo, whatever you need. And then let's do the other side, left knee forward. So this has happened quite a lot if you look at the history of spiritual teachers and teaching and religions. A teacher comes along, they try and teach something that is well above the current understanding of the culture that they're in. And people try their best to understand with their minds, but the mind can never understand a spiritual teaching. Not in its absolute sense. We'll always miss the mark. This happened to the Christian teaching as it grew. And that led actually to what we call now the Dark Ages in Europe. People were trying to emulate Jesus, but they didn't emulate his understanding. They didn't emulate what he saw. They emulated his exterior. They said, well, I'm going to give up everything. I'm not going to work. I'm going to be poor. Jesus says I should be poor. And it took Martin Luther coming along and saying, it is not unchristian to earn money. It is not unchristian to start a business. It is not unchristian to be wealthy. These are ideas that had entered into people's minds from misreading Christian scripture. So at least one theory says that the Gita was written at a time that this was happening in India. And so the Gita, basically the main teaching for me that comes from the Gita, there are many layers and there are many teachings within the Gita, even though it's not that long. It's not like the Bible. It's not like this heavy, thick, huge thing. Take you a lifetime to get through. It's in a almost like a story format, and it comes from a longer story called the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is biblical in nature. It is a huge, monolithic, epic story. It is quite a read, if you ever get a chance to read it. I'm going through my second time on the Mahabharata now. Very entertaining, very interesting. But the Gita is within the Mahabharata, and many people separate the Gita out for good reason, because the Gita, you could say, is really the heart of the teaching. In the Gita, a young warrior named Arjun is being counseled by his charioteer named Krishna. And Krishna is someone who's woken up to the real nature of reality. He sees things as they are. Arjuna is still caught in the egoic perspective, in his own attachments, his own desires, his own beliefs about right and wrong. And what's so interesting about the story is what Arjuna proposes at the beginning of the story, many of us would agree with. Many of us would say, yeah, that sounds right to me. Arjun is being faced with fighting a battle that he doesn't want to fight, and he doesn't want to fight it because it's his own members of his own family on the other side. And he comes up with reason after reason after reason why it is wrong and bad for him to fight this war. He even comes up with reasons why fighting in general are bad. Again, many of us would agree. And yet Krishna, speaking from the absolute point of view, says, Arjun, you have to fight this war. And as I said earlier about grace, Krishna tells him at one point, he says, you can't kill or be killed. I do that. You're simply my instrument. If you think that you can kill or be killed, you do not understand reality's subtle ways. Again, it's this type of arrogance. You think you can kill someone? You think you can take a life? You can't. Not without my blessing. So Arjun is in this position where he's wanting to withdraw from life, from his duty. He's saying, I don't want to do this anymore. And what Krishna does as his teacher is he throws him right back into the fray. He says, you have to fight. Very powerful teaching. All right, let's do a down dog. And then again, we'll rest on our belly. Right. From here, let's press back to a kneeling position. And let's bring the left leg out in front of us. Keep the right leg folded alongside your hip. So this is a little more involved because the risks are perhaps greater. So I would like you to do this pose without any strain on your knee or your ankle. So here are a few things for you to look at. Position of the toes. Are the toes directly behind the heel, or do you flex the foot and have the toes point out to the side? There's no right answer here, guys. Again, how does it feel? That tells you right from wrong. I don't tell you that. You feel it, okay? Which one gives you the best stretch here with the least amount of strain on your knee and your ankle? Now, you might not feel any stretch here yet. That's fine. We'll get there. Next, knee. Does the knee come straight out? Do I bring the knee out to the side? Again, anywhere in between is fine. What do I want? I want to stretch here. I do not want to strain these two areas, okay? You can sit up on something like a block or even several blocks. If your knee is hurting, that can help, all right? If the ankle is in a lot of pain, sometimes taking a blanket, putting it underneath the ankle or the bones of the foot can help. Now, what about that stretch? If you already feel it, you're good. You can stay seated upright like this the whole time. Most of you probably don't feel it, so you'll need a lower back. Put your hands, forearms, onto a bolster, the crown of your head, or all the way back onto your back. This is called a half saddle. If you go back far enough, you will likely feel a stretch, or not a stretch, you'll feel it in your back as well as the front of your thigh. That is fine. It is a back bend. What if you're all the way on your back and you still don't feel a stretch? Bend the left knee and place the left foot on the ground so the knee points up. Okay? Then from there, if you want to go a step further, you drop the knee out to the left side. Still not enough, go ahead and grab your left leg and pull it in towards you. Experiment with the position of that leg and find the best stretch for the right thigh. If you're still having trouble, let me know. It could mean that just something is not quite right with what's going on. So everyone got it? Now once again, we need to be free of any sort of sensation or idea that our right knee is being compromised, or right ankle, okay? Very important. We want to do this safely. So the Bhagavad Gita, which is again one of two texts that really inform yoga practice in India and in the US today, basically tells us that we can't try and spiritually bypass and try and sneak out of reality and living our lives and being a part of the fray. That's not spiritual. One of my teachers says that there's been a lot of confusion during the what's called Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is a dark age. And according to yoga, we're in the Kali Yuga. Some people say we're at the end of it. Some people say we're right in the middle of it. My teacher's teacher said we're toward the end of it. A new age is beginning to dawn where people are going to awaken more and more to their true nature. Awakeness itself, or consciousness itself, is going to recognize within each individual that it's not actually an individual. It's going to see truth, a reality, that everything is interconnected. But what he says is during the Kali Yuga, and still to this day, there's a lot of confusion in yoga about renunciate versus householder practices. And he says during the Kali Yuga, renunciate practices were taught to householders. And he says the problem with this is a renunciate practice dissolves your ability to act in the world. It makes you a worse and worse agent for change in the world. And if you're a householder, that is not a good thing. That's a very bad idea. And then he said renunciates took what were essentially householder practices and took them up as their most esoteric and highest teachings. So according to him, one thing that's going to begin to happen more and more in this dawning age is there'll be more and more clarity about, am I a householder or am I a renunciate? If I'm a householder, then I need to do householder practices because these will actually enhance my ability to be an agent in my life. And let's be clear, just because you're single and you do a lot of yoga, it doesn't mean you're not a householder. A renunciate is someone who goes and either lives in an ashram or they go live in a cave by themselves. It's not just some person who's like, yeah, I'm like an urban renunciate. I hang out and I go to yoga class and I drink juice. I'm a vegan. I renounce the world. It doesn't work like that. So if we're in this class, if we're driving a car around, if we're doing all these things, we are a householder. And there are certain practices that are appropriate for us to do that will actually enhance our ability to act in the world. And there are certain ones that will actually diminish our effectiveness. So make no mistake about it. If you are a householder, action. You must act. Even not acting is a type of action. All right, please take your time. Roll away from the folded leg, free it. And then just gradually make your way up. And we'll do the other side. It's easier once you sit up. So I recommend most people sit up first and then switch sides. On a deeper level, renunciation is really ultimately about renouncing our thoughts, our beliefs, our story about ourselves and the world we live in. When we renounce these things, then we have freedom. and we've reached the end of the line as far as yoga is concerned. The end of the line for yoga is the beginning of a new movement, or a new life, you could say, a new deepening of understanding that, from what I can tell and what I've heard, goes on infinitely. Life has no end. There's no limit to the universe. So that new beginning, new movement, new life can continue to deepen and deepen and deepen infinitely. But first, that renunciation of the personal self, and the personal interest, again, which has nothing to do with leaving your family or leaving your job or any of those things. Some people, even though they have an ego, live very close to truth for whatever reason. And when they wake up from the egoic dream, when they recognize their true nature, there's very little that needs to change in their life. Very little. They may not change jobs or spouses or anything. It may be so subtle that someone looking from the outside doesn't see it. You okay? Your what? Your knee. You might want to try sitting up on something, like a block. Mm-hmm. And then you can put the bolster behind you so that you can lay back. But yeah, don't antagonize your knee. Is that better? For others, when awakening comes, they find that there is a lot of change that needs to happen in their life. And that can be quite difficult and can create a period of confusion and a lot of change. In the end, it's all good. But in the short term, it might look like your whole world is coming apart. Because it is. If your life is held together by a strong egoic structure, and that's it, when that structure disappears, you'll find there's no energy to hold it together as it is. The energy that was holding your life together is gone. It's been redirected in a different direction. And at that point, things start to change. You might find that you're much simpler than you thought you were. You might find that you need much less than you ever imagined. You might find that you don't need people to be a certain way or to act a certain way or to do certain things for you. All right, let's roll away from that leg. We'll release it. Let's rebound on our back. So just take a moment to feel the body, feel your breath, your mood, your thoughts. Again, you might be thinking about something completely different. You might have a vacation coming up and you're just, the palm trees, I can't wait to be there. It's going to be so awesome. But I'll invite you to recognize that's a story. You might find when you get there, it's exactly like the story you created. But there's a very good chance when you get there, it'll be at least slightly different. And the more different it is, the more you will likely suffer if you attach to your story. If you can let go of your story, then you'll find that the adventure is just what it needs to be at that moment. This is true of every moment of our life. All right, let's bring our legs in. We'll give them a nice squeeze. Shake it off with the leg cradle. And then with hands under the hips, extend your legs up, lift your head and neck. Gradually lower the legs toward the ground. Hover for a moment, let's pop the legs up. Come on up to seated. All right, let's set up for yoga nidra, which means sleep meditation. We'll turn around so that our feet face the wall closest to us. Take a bolster underneath the knees. Laying flat on the back. I do not recommend that you place anything under your head because that will raise your head above your heart. And I would like your head and your heart to be on the same plane. You may, however, roll a blanket and place it underneath your neck.